And this is our number The Fastest 15. It's brought to you by IRG Physical and Hand Therapy. They allow us to bring this to you commercial free.
It's time for the Fastest 15 Minutes of the News. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
It is a world of news in a tidy little 15-minute package just for you. Welcome to our Fastest 15. And the breaking news, you just heard it in Carolyn's newscast, and it is super annoying. Attorney General Bob Ferguson has just said that any sheriffs who do not enforce the new strict gun laws that were passed by Citizens Initiative, that they could be held liable. In an open letter to law enforcement, Ferguson writes, Seattle Times is reporting this, that while he is confident the wide-ranging law is constitutional and would withstand court challenges, but he's concerned about threats from county sheriffs to not enforce the new law, because 13 county sheriffs have said they won't enforce the law. You know, if there's one other soundbite you can find, Nicole, the one where I ask him about just picking and choosing, because I talked to Sheriff Bob Songer a couple of weeks ago about this. And he had a great soundbite when I said, "What can you just choose to not enforce a law?" Right. And if you can find that little clip, that'd be great. Because I talked to this sheriff, these Eastern Washington sheriffs, man, salt of the earth people. And he said, "Look, I'm not going to enforce something that's unconstitutional." And I think clearly, this is unconstitutional. This law, I mean, you have your house locked, your guns in your nightstand, somebody kicks down your front door, steals your gun, and then uses it in a commission of crime, and the gun owner who had it locked in his house could be held criminally responsible and could go to jail? I mean, this makes no sense. It's also, and the part about it that is most clearly unconstitutional, is the Second Amendment guarantees rights to all citizens. And unless Ferguson is going to argue that 18, 19, and 20-year-olds, because it would raise the buying age from 18 to 21 for many types of weapons here in Washington, and unless Bob Ferguson is going to try to argue that 18, 19, and 20-year-olds aren't citizens, and you better think carefully about this, Fergie, because you've been trying to tell us for years now that the reason we need to raise the buying age for gun purchases is because teenage minds aren't fully developed. Well, Fergie, if you dream of getting to the governor's mansion, as is clearly your desire, you're going to need some undeveloped brains to help get you there. So be real careful about all of this. Nice job, Nicole. That's quick work. That's fast work. So I talked to Sheriff Bob Songer a couple of weeks ago about this. And I asked him, how can you as a sheriff pick and choose which laws you're going to enforce? Are we in a dangerous area when elected officials such as yourself can decide which laws you will and will not enforce? And we have that over here where the King County prosecutor, the Snohomish County prosecutor, they've said that they are not going to prosecute personal possession amounts of heroin or, you know, meth. And so now we have a bunch of politicians who are deciding which laws they do and do not like. Shouldn't you have to wait until a court challenge strikes this down before you can unilaterally say you will not enforce it as sheriff?
No. As a constitutional sheriff under the Washington Constitution, not only my job, and I swore to uphold the Washington State Constitution and the United States Constitution, not only my job is to throw bad guys in jail, but it's also to ensure the safety of our community, the people that we serve. My only boss is the citizens of Clickitat County. And that gives me the authority, if I believe something's unsafe or their rights are being violated, I have a sworn duty to step in and try to prevent that from occurring, and that's what I'm doing in this case. Now, ultimately, you're right, the courts will decide it, but in the meantime, I'm not going to go out there and arrest people violating 1639, seize their guns, get them booked into jail, they go through prosecution, they get convicted, and they've spent thousands of dollars. Then 3 or 4 years down the road, the courts decide, you know what, Sheriff, you were right, that was unconstitutional. How about all these people that went to jail and got criminal convictions and spent money on attorneys and stuff? It's just not right.
How about that? A sheriff who will stand up for the Constitution. And Bob Ferguson now says, just breaking news this hour, our attorney general says he will hold that sheriff and the 12 others who have said we are not going to enforce an unconstitutional law. He says he will hold them liable. Really? The attorney general of the state of Washington is going to go after sheriffs for upholding our state constitution? And as I said, this is such left-wing nonsense from our attorney general, who allows the King County and Snohomish County prosecutors to legalize, without any public vote, they have legalized heroin and meth in King and Snohomish County. Bob Ferguson could have saved taxpayers millions of dollars when Seattle tried to ramrod through an unconstitutional income tax. Bob Ferguson knew it was unconstitutional. He could have saved millions, but he would never take a position against drugs because you'd have to be high to support someone like Bob Ferguson. But he'll never take a stand against legalizing drugs. He'll never take a stand against pursuing the holy grail of an income tax. But sheriffs who say, well, this is clearly unconstitutional, these new gun laws, Bob Ferguson says, I'll go after those sheriffs. It is further proof of what I've been telling you for a long, long time. And I'm a watchdog of government, have been my entire career. But Bob Ferguson is truly the single most dangerous politician I've ever seen in our state, because he uses the power of the state's highest legal office, the Attorney General, to attack people who uphold the Constitution, to attack people who are moderate or even, oh, heaven forbid, right of center. And the furthest left pushes unconstitutional income tax, legalization of heroin and meth, not one peep from the Attorney General. And when the scales of justice, or Lady Liberty, whatever her name is, the one with the blindfold, when the law is no longer blind, but it's a protection racket for the radical left and a pit bull against anybody who isn't radical left, that's when we have one of the most dangerous politicians that I have ever watchdogged in this state. And so that's Bob Ferguson. Breaking news just coming into us this hour. He's going to go after the sheriffs who Oh, by the way, that sheriff that I just played you the clip of, Clititas County, Bob Songer, as I was wrapping up the interview, he gave me one of the greatest interview closes I could remember. Sheriff, I enjoyed talking with you about this. I appreciate you taking the time with me today.
Yeah, one thing I think we should really keep in mind, God, guns, and guts is what made America free.
Love that, man. God, guns, and guts. Up next in the Fastest 15. Ever since that Green New Deal was announced, and I went through all the idiocy to replace or upgrade every building in the country to eliminate air travel as quickly as possible. They say they probably won't make the 10-year goal. To eliminate farting cows. That's the way they called it in their document. It was like an average to maybe a C-minus fourth grade student paper at school. It certainly wasn't high school term paper or middle school level work. But we have a bunch of idiots that have gotten elected into Congress and elsewhere. So we're going to get rid of air travel. We're going to get rid of cows because they fart. We will guarantee an income to people who are unable or unwilling to work. So if somebody just feels like sitting on their fat butt every single day, then they'll just take money from other people. And how are we going to pay for this? The estimated cost of all of this, $100 trillion. Not billion. $100 trillion. Which is fantasy land. Unless Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez says she's thinking about signing on to some new... I'm not making this up. She's thinking about signing on to some new economic theory that's being circulated among the radical left, that you can just print as much money as you want and it will have no negative connotations. Now, I've told you, I mentioned this last hour to the state rep, the $23 trillion our nation has in debt is the greatest threat our country faces. It's the greatest threat to our kids. But my fear is that the socialists want hyperinflation that would wipe out everybody's savings, their pension, everything you've been able to scrap together for yourself. And so that's how, once they destroy everyone, then they can rebuild a new socialist country in their new image. Well, Bill Gates, of all people, Bill Gates is speaking out about this new economic deal. And he talked with, it was a podcast called Verge. And one of the things that AOC wants is 70% or more upper tax rate.
Certainly the idea that government be more effective in terms of how it runs education or social programs, you know, there's a lot of opportunity for improvement there. In terms of revenue collection, you wouldn't want to just focus on the ordinary income rate, because people who are wealthy have a rounding error of ordinary income. They have income that, you know, just is the value of their stock, which if they don't sell it, it doesn't show up in income at all. Or if it shows up, it shows over in the capital gain side. And so the ability of hedge fund people or various people, they aren't paying that ordinary income rate. The one thing that never gets much press, the IRS shows the statistics for the top 400 people, the highest income and the rate they pay. Anyway, you should look at that. It's about a 20% rate. So it has nothing to do with the, you know, 39.6 marginal ordinary income rate. So it's a misfocus if you focus on that.
I would trust Bill Gates on numbers matters rather than these new socialists who are coming aboard. And, of course, the top 1% pay more than 30% of total income taxes in the United States. I mean, they're already taxed on income at a very high rate. And Bill Gates said what extreme politicians are proposing. Pay close attention to this.
You finally have some politicians who are so extreme that I'd say, no, that's, you know, that's even beyond. You do start to create tax dodging and disincentives and, you know, an incentive to have the income show up in other countries and things. But we can be more progressive. The estate tax and the tax on capital, the way the FICA Social Security tax works, we can be more progressive without really threatening the income generation, what you have left to decide how to spread around. Tax systems are always being debated. Piketty, actually the one who put this idea of a wealth tax on the table, the only asset class that you have that traditionally is for real estate, which makes a lot of sense. Real estate is special in some ways. You know, certainly we have a government that's spending more than it's taking in. So the idea that at some point, if you want to avoid massive inflation, you need to probably raise more money, because what you need to do in terms of your medical care promises will make expenditures even higher than they are today.
So you're not like an adherent of like modern monetary theory that says, don't worry about the deficit, we'll just print the money and do it.
That is some crazy talk.
it's certainly out there. It's gaining currency.
Well, that's crazy.
It is crazy. Jay Inslee signed on to the Green New Deal. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez says she may embrace this new monetary policy that you just print money and you just keep printing it. And as I said in my conversation with the representative last hour, I think that there's a very evil plan behind this. And it's what Bill Gates just referenced. Hyperinflation. Destroy the value of everybody's savings, of everybody's real estate. Destroy value of everything in the country, as has happened in Venezuela. And then once there's chaos and anarchy, then you rebuild the nation in a Marxist image. And government will control everything. And the people who have power will have all the money. People who have money will lose everything. And that's where we're headed, unless we put the brakes on things. Unless we start electing people who've got just a tiny bit of common sense and aren't consumed with getting incomes to people unwilling to work. Next up in the Fastest 15, Bloomingdale's department store has apologized because they've been selling a T-shirt with the words two four-letter words on the front of this T-shirt. It says, fake news. And some TV, local TV reporters across the country went on Twitter and posted a picture of it. Hey, Bloomingdale's, this isn't funny or fashionable. This is a reporter at the New York City station, Allison Caden. This isn't funny or fashionable. It further delegitimizes hardworking journalists who bring real news to their communities. No, it doesn't. It doesn't delegitimize me. I bring real news to our community. So a bunch of TV, local TV reporters got all hurt because of the fake news T-shirt Bloomingdale's was selling. Bloomingdale's wrote some lame apology. Thank you for bringing this to our attention. We apologize for any offense we may have caused. We take this feedback very seriously and are working quickly to remove this T-shirt again. So, a lame apology, caving in to some weirdly too sensitive local TV reporters. And so now they can't sell the fake news T-shirt anymore. And the beat goes on. That is your Fastest 15.
This has been the Fastest 15 Minutes in the News. Fast. Dory's Fastest 15.
You give us 15 minutes, we'll give you the world. Hey, look who's in the building. The voice of the Mariners, Rick Riz. How about, with all the snow and slush outside, how about if we talk a little summertime? Rick Riz is going to pop in next here on the Dory Monson Show. It's icy. You've been skidding around. You've been stuck in your house. You can't see any light at the end of the tunnel. So let me welcome in the voice of your Seattle Mariners, Rick Riz, because we can actually talk about some baseball.
I know.
Look at you.
Can't you feel the heat of Arizona coming our way? The sunshine of Peoria. Ah, the pitchers and catchers reported yesterday, and baseball is right around the corner, Dory.
I couldn't believe it when I heard one of our reporters yesterday say that pitchers and catchers report. Yeah. It's been completely off my radar screen, Rick.
Yeah. I mean, when you hear those words, the snow starts to melt, doesn't it? A little bit.
A little bit.
Maybe a little bit.
Yeah, but not in my heart, because I don't need to melt the snow. I still like the snow.
I'm having fun.
I know. Yeah. But so it's, and you were telling me before we went on the air that it's kind of an accelerated timetable this year for the team, too. Why is that?
Everything has moved up because of the trip to Japan this year. Our first game at spring training is coming up on February 21st against the San Diego Padres.
Ooh, and so we're looking at 9 days from now. Holy moly. Okay.
Exactly. And then we leave camp on March the 14th, fly to Tokyo, to open up the season against the Oakland A's on March 20th and the 21st. Prior to that, we play a couple of exhibition games against two of the Japanese ball clubs. So we open up on the 20th and 21st, head on back home, and play a couple of exhibition games at T-Mobile Park against San Diego. Then we reopen the season against the defending World Series champion, the Boston Red Sox, on March the 28th. So everything has been moved up about a week or so. So we are ready to go. And they're down there right now getting ready in the sunshine.
So this Japan season opening series, one of the interesting storylines is Ichiro, who's 45 now?
45.
Is that right? Okay.
Yeah.
So he stopped playing midpoint of last season. Then he signed a playing contract, so he's expected to play in the exhibition and the regular season games in Japan?
Yes.
Okay. And I know there's been a little bit of controversy about that. I got to tell you, Rick, the older I get, the more I want to see an old guy do something that's, you know, a challenge. So I think it's kind of a cool storyline.
I really do, too. I mean, here's a guy that came over in 2001. We didn't know what to expect. He was one of the greatest players in the history over in Japan prior to that. But we didn't know how those numbers would translate to the major leagues.
What was he, like 27, 28 when he came over here?
Yeah, 27 when he came over here. He had 1,280 hits over there. Ends up with over 3,000 hits now in the major leagues. Because his first 10 years in the big leagues with the Mariners, he averaged over 200 base hits a season. But we didn't know what to expect. In 2001, he goes out and wins the Rookie of the Year award and the MVP award. But here he is at 45. He still wants to play. I think it's going to be a great story. Our roster can expand to, I think, about 28 players for that trip. So you can carry Ichiro. And then it's up to him and the organization as to how long he plays throughout the course of the year.
Yeah.
And last year, he started the season with a ball club and struggled. The guy's 45.
What was his batting average in the games he played last year?
I think he hit about 220 or so.
All right.
So, but he works hard. He took batting practice every day. He took fly balls every day. He had the uniform on every day before the ball game, then had to go back up in the clubhouse. And then if the ball club won, Ichiro, boom, was one of the first guys on the field. He was an advisor last year. But he told me at the time of the announcement last year, early in the season, he said, Rick, he says, I did not use the R word. I am not retired.
Right.
I want to come back and play next year. Well, here it is next year. He wants to play. It's going to be a great story over in Japan. Even he told me a long time ago he wants to play till he's 50. That would be unbelievable. But if he did, then, you know, I wouldn't put it past him. But he wants to go over there and make an impression. He wants to make an impression here.
Sure.
He told me he still wants to play till he's
50. He needs a little redemption.
Yeah.
I remember, I think it was my last year when I used to cover the Mariners on a daily basis. And the Texas Rangers were in town. And I was going to do he hadn't pitched that day. He did pitch that day. Nolan Ryan. And so me and some other reporters, we were going to do a post-game interview with Nolan Ryan. And, yeah, this is probably before they had all the nutritionists and everything. But I walk in the clubhouse. All these 23, 24, 25-year-old guys, they're at the buffet table. They're loading up their plates. Nolan Ryan is doing 20 minutes on the stationary bike and won't do any interviews until he had done his post-game workout. And I'm thinking, if I'm a 25-year-old guy, and I see whatever he was, I think he was 45, 44, 45.
He pitched till he was 46.
Yeah. If I'm 25 and I see that Nolan Ryan's riding a stationary bike for 20 minutes before he'll grab a bite to eat, then that's exactly how I'm going to lead my life too. And that's why I always, you know, love it. It's so weird because I see him now because he's team president or something with Texas.
I don't know what he does. With Houston.
Houston. Yeah. But yeah, you see him in the cutaways behind home plate. And I think, wow, he looks like an old man. Well, it's because he is.
Yeah.
Because he pitched for so long.
But he was a power pitcher the whole time, too, because he did that.
Yeah.
I would see him after he pitched a 9-inning complete game, probably threw about 130, 140 pitches at least. Dave and I would be up in the press box in the radio booth with Kevin Kremen doing the post-game show, and I'd see Nolan walk across behind home plate from his clubhouse to our clubhouse to work on the bike and work out. And then we'd be on the air for another half hour, 45 minutes or whatever, or an hour. I'd still be in the booth. And here comes Nolan back with a towel dripping wet from perspiration. This is just after he pitched a complete game, probably threw about 140 pitches.
Yeah.
But that's the way he did it. He was old school. And he wanted to go as hard as he could for as long as he could every start. Now, you know, it's totally different now as far as starting pitchers. But that was Nolan Ryan.
I tell you, I mean, when I was 11 years old, my uncle lived down in Orange County. He took me to a Angels game. Nolan Ryan struck out 18. And I was sitting right behind home plate, and I kept the ticket stub for about 30 years. Wow. And I was thinking, it was 25 years later, I think. And I'm watching him at the end of his career. It was just, yeah, I love stories like that.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
You know, he wanted to be great. He was great. And there weren't any shortcuts. He worked hard.
Yeah.
And that's how he was able to do it. He told me years ago, he said, everybody thinks, you know, it's all about your arm and everything, keeping your arm in shape. For him, he said, for me, it's my legs. My arm can't be strong if my legs aren't strong.
Yeah.
Because if my legs are weak, then my arm has to catch up. That's when you have elbow problems, shoulder problems.
Sure.
But he said, I had to work on my legs, and he had legs like tree stumps.
Yeah.
And you could hear him grunt every time, you know, he took that stride down the mound and threw a pitch.
That's why I have so much admiration for you. Nobody gave you anything. You earned every inch of what you've gotten, Rick Rez.
I did. You too, Dory.
Well, thank you very much. All right. So baseball season, spring training, the guys are reporting right now, and you'll have games on our sister station, 710 ESPN, before we know it.
Exactly. February 21st, our first game against the San Diego Padres. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Peoria Sports Complex and the start of the 2019 season. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be fun. A lot of new names. And
yeah.
And faces on this ball club, we'll have a fun year.
Good stuff. All right, my friend.
Thanks,
good seeing you.
Good to see you too, buddy. And be careful on that
the boogie board.
The boogie board with the snow thing, okay? Take it easy,
Rick,
you know?
I put the boogie in boogie board.
Okay.
Hey, Rick Riz joining us, and we have lots more straight ahead here on the Dory Monson Show. As you know, my closest megastar friend is Chris Pratt, because we had him on the pregame show one time when he raised the 12 flag before a Seahawk game. But he was just very nice guy, and you know, chatted with us before and after we talked with him. And he seems like a man who's just filled with joy. He really does, and you know, loves his kids Yeah, and he is. He's probably the biggest grossing movie star in the world. And I told you yesterday about the criticism he was under, because he went on Stephen Colbert's show and said this.
There's this great quote that I actually heard in church, and it felt like it really appropriate, which was, if the spotlight that's shining on you is brighter than the light that comes from within you, it'll kill you. And you see it all the time.
Wow.
And I like that. People in our position, people that are actors, you see it a lot. You know, it's a real bright spotlight.
If you don't have enough of a self to share, then you can get swamped.
If you don't have a life, well, sometimes just having a self to share is what kills you, because there's nothing left. So you have to have a light to share.
So Chris Pratt said that, and it just, you know, sounds like somebody who's got the world in perspective despite all he's attained. But, and here's part of the story I told you yesterday, and then I have an update. Ellen Page, the actress, who seems like, in stark contrast to Chris Pratt being about the most joyful celebrity you'll see, Ellen Page seems like the most hangdog, depressed, just celebrity. So Ellen Page, after Chris Pratt said that, she went on Twitter and wrote, okay, but his church is infamously anti-LGBTQ, so maybe address that too. Chris Pratt goes to Hillsong Church. And as I told you yesterday, I don't think I've ever attended Hillsong. I do know some people who have. And the people I know and what I know of the church, they're not anti-LGBTQ. So that's what I said yesterday about all this. Chris Pratt has just responded to Ellen Page in an Instagram post. And I want to read this to you. I want to share it with you. The background picture is a sheep standing on a rock. Here's what Chris Pratt wrote on Instagram. It has recently been suggested that I belong to a church which hates a certain group of people and is infamously anti-LGBTQ. Nothing could be further from the truth. I go to a church that opens their doors to absolutely everyone. Despite what the Bible says about divorce, my church community was there for me every step of the way, never judging, just gracefully accompanying me on my walk. They helped me tremendously, offering love and support. It's what I've seen them do for others on countless occasions, regardless of sexual orientation, race, or gender. My faith is important to me, but no church defines me or my life, and I aim not to be a spokesman for any church or any group of people. My values define who I am. We need less hate in this world, not more. I'm a man who believes that everyone is entitled to love who they want, free from the judgment of their fellow man. Jesus said, I give you a new command. Love one another. This is what guides me in my life. He's a God of love, acceptance, and forgiveness. Hate has no place in my or this world. What a fantastic response. I mean, he shares something personal, and he's one of the few celebrities. You know, when he presented at the MTV Awards, he shared his faith and sprinkled in some humor so that his message wouldn't be lost on, you know, as a 13, 14-year-olds in the audience. And here's one of the few celebrities willing to share his faith, and a fellow actor, Ellen Page, decides to slam him and try to tie him to hate. And he responds with what you just heard, which is absolutely beautiful and absolutely accurate. Big lead of two. It's coming up next.